Good afternoon, CHRY listeners, and you're tuned in to African Perspectives. I am your host this week, Ome Sama Rahamthullah. And in the background, you're listening to Aziza Brahim, and she is a singer from the Western Sahara. And today we'll be focusing our discussion on the Western Sahara, especially in light of the repression by the Moroccan government just this past Monday. So we'll start off, as we always do, with headlines. And you are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is CHRY 105.5 FM, African Perspectives, and we start off our show every week with headlines from the continent. So here they are. The trial has started of eight officers charged with the murder of prominent human rights activist in the Democratic Republic of Congo. They are accused of killing Foribert Chabeya, head of the charity Voice of the Voiceless, in June. His body was found bound and gagged in the back of his car after being called to a meeting with Police Chief John Numbi, which did not take place. General Numbi has been suspended but does not face any charges. The officers all face charges of abduction, assassination, terrorism, conspiracy, and mislaying of weapons. Three of the accused are on the run and will be tried in absentia. A lawyer representing Voice of the Voiceless said the case should have been heard before a high military court. Mr. Chabeya received regular threats in a career spanning more than 20 years. On the day he disappeared, Mr. Chabeya sent a text message to his wife saying that he was at the police headquarters for a meeting, but was not heard from again. Both the police and Voice of the Voiceless have confirmed that the meeting with General Numbi did not take place. Mr. Chabeya's driver, Fidel Bazana, is still missing. The trial will probably last for several months, especially if Mr. Chabeya's supporters put up a legal fight to bring General Numbi before their court, as they have promised. At least five people have been killed in clashes in Western Sahara after Moroccan security forces broke up a protest camp in the disputed region on Monday. The camp, for several thousand people near the territory's capital, Léoune, was the biggest protest against Moroccan rule in the 35-year dispute. Dozens of people were also injured in the violence, which later spread to the streets of Léoune. It came shortly before talks began in the U.S. on the future of the territory. The Gadayem Izek camp was set up about a month ago outside Léoune as a protest by displaced Sahrawi people about their living conditions. It was home to more than 12,000 people. Witnesses said security forces entered the camp in the early hours of the morning using helicopters and water cannons to force people to leave. Moroccan officials said five security personnel had been killed in the unrest. The pro-independence Polisario Front said Moroccan security forces had killed a 26-year-old protester at the camp, a claim denied by Morocco. Polisario heavily criticized the Moroccan operation to close the camp. The movement's self-appointed government is based in Algeria, from where its foreign minister, Salem Ouled Salek, accused Morocco of acting, quote, in a frivolous and undiscriminating fashion against defenseless civilians. The unrest set a tense tone for the opening of the UN-mediated talks in New York between negotiators from the Moroccan government and members of Polisario. a prominent Sahrawi human rights campaigner, Aminatou Haider, has told the BBC she believes the clearing of the protest camp in Western Sahara by Morocco forces could be classed as a crime against humanity. Moroccan authorities have not reacted to Mrs. Haider's comments. Ms. Haider, who is in Portugal meeting local supporters of the Sahrawi People's Campaign for Self-Determination, said it was not by chance that the violence had escalated when they did, right before the peace talks. Morocco has requested on Saturday that four foreigners in Laayoune, including three Spaniards, leave Moroccan territory as thousands of people in Madrid protested the police raid. Further straining relations between Moroccan authorities and Spaniards over the raid, Rabat also protested against the broadcast of a Spanish TV quote-unquote bogus picture allegedly falsely portraying the Laayoune violence. Media and rights groups also have had a number of journalists, many from Spanish media, have been prevented from going to Laayoune to report on the events. The clashes came 2 weeks after Al Jazeera was expelled from the country for its coverage of a range of issues, including the Western Sahara. Western Sahara is a former Spanish colony and is the scene of Africa's longest-running territorial dispute. The phosphate-rich territory was annexed by Morocco after Spanish settlers left in 1975. Polisario fought a guerrilla war against Morocco until the UN brokered a ceasefire in 1991. Rabat now offers to grant it autonomy, while Polisario is demanding a referendum for full independence. The talks between both sides have been deadlocked for years, and the last meeting in February 2010 ended without any movement in the dispute. Today on African Perspectives, we will be focusing on the liberation struggle of the Sahrawi people and the repression faced by the Moroccan government and the recent peace talks taking place in New York. Stay tuned for this in-depth analysis after the headlines. Residents in the West African state of Guinea have voted in a presidential runoff election decided as the country's first free polls since independence from France in 1958. No major disputes were reported as voters went to the polls today, though worries remained over the potential for ethnically driven violence once the results are released. The runoff pitted Selou Dalien Diallo, the former prime minister, against Alpha Condé, a veteran opposition leader, each representing one of Guinea's two most populous ethnic groups, the Peul and Malinke, respectively. Members of the Kimberley Process Diamond Watchdog began talks in Jerusalem last Monday on whether to allow Zimbabwe to resume exports of the gemstone from its controversial Marange fields. The organization, which is meant to ensure diamonds are conflict-free, suspended its certification of Marange fields last year over claims of forced labor and torture at the gem mine. But it agreed in July to allow Zimbabwe to export two shipments of diamonds if Kimberley Process monitors were given access to the Marange fields. Over the last few months, new fact-finding missions were sent to Zimbabwe to see if everything was in accordance with the Kimberley Process, and they presented their findings this week. A New York-based rights group has claimed that research carried out between July and September showed large parts of the Marange fields remained under control of Zimbabwe's military, which was smuggling diamonds and abusing local workers. The conference organizers of the Kimberley Process in Israel announced that they are upholding the ban preventing Zimbabwe from exporting its vast stockpile of diamonds from Marange, as the meeting ended last Thursday without a compromise. In an interesting twist to this story, Indian buyers who visited Zimbabwe last month to seal diamond deals had pledged to lobby their Indian government to endorse Zimbabwe's gems ahead of the Kimberley Process meeting. Surat Rough Diamond Sourcing India Limited had said that it would put its weight behind Zimbabwe at the Kimberley Process meeting in Jerusalem. For more than a decade, a host of young footballers, overwhelmingly under the age of 18, more than 3,000 since 2000, have left the African continent to try their luck in Europe and Asia, according to the website of Association Foot Solidaire, a non-governmental organization based in Paris, which fights against mistreatment of young African footballers. The mafia-type characters who extract money from parents, most of them poor, take young Africans to Asia or Europe with the promise of a trial at a big club. In the end, many of them are abandoned in the streets with no means to support themselves. FIFA, the governing body for soccer worldwide, has thus now implemented what it calls a transfer matching system. The transfer matching system collects 30 pieces of information about a player, and for the transfer of a player to be recognized, the data held in both clubs must match perfectly. The clubs that recruit young players for a bargain price with the view to sell them for much more will have to review their policy. According to FIFA's new guidelines, the transfer matching system will no longer authorize a transfer of a youth who does not belong to a club registered with the National Federation, and the federations are now involved in tracking transfers. In its quest to improve its image, Egypt's government recently hired a major UK public relations firm, Bell Portinger, to better deliver its message to an international audience. The decision to seek PR help is due to the government's discount over the way Egypt's regime is portrayed in Western media. According to Hebe Mariayev, a Human Rights Watch researcher on Egypt and Libya, there has been an increase in the number of arrests of dissent, crackdown on peaceful demonstrations, and an increase in the number of arrests due to religious beliefs. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex rights organizations and activists have expressed concerns over the Sexual Practices Against Nature Bill presented before the National Parliament of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which aims at criminalizing homosexuality as sexual practices against nature. Jean Bedel Kaniki, president of Groupe Hirondelle Bukavu, an LGBTI organization in the Democratic Republic of Congo, confirmed that on the 22nd of January, the bill was judged admissible by the majority of the parliament and was sent to the Sociocultural Committee that will discuss its permissibility in terms of the provisions and principles of the Constitution before its promulgation. Section 2 of the proposed bill singles out homosexuality as sexual practices against nature. It also criminalizes any activities that directly or indirectly aim to promote the rights of LGBTI persons, therefore in accordance with section 174H3 of the bill, quote, all publications, posters, pamphlets, or films highlighting or likely to arouse or encourage sexual practices against nature are forbidden within the territory of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and all associations that promote or defend sexual relations against nature are forbidden within the territory of the DRC. Those who go against the stipulations of this bill will be punished by 3 to 5 years in prison and a fine of 500,000 Congolese francs. Kaniki explained that the bill is most likely to be passed next year. In an open letter sent to human rights organizations and activists, the organizations denounced the proposed bill as a gross human rights violation that goes against all international treaties ratified by the DRC. And finally, Kenya is forcing Somalis fleeing conflict back across the border in violation of international law, the United Nations Refugee Agency said on Wednesday. The United Nations High Commission for Refugees said some of the 8,300 Somalis stranded at a border post in northeastern Kenya had already been crossing the frontier into no man's land. It is said that most were women, children, and elderly people. Somalia has been beset by violence and awash with weapons since the overthrow of dictator Mohamed Said Barre in 1991. You are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. This is African Perspectives, and we just brought you some headlines from the continent. And we will be talking about the Western Sahara for the rest of the show. Please stay tuned. We're going to take a community listings break and be right back. You are tuned in to CHRY 105.5. This is African Perspectives. And in the background there, you were listening to Aziza Brahim. And she is a Sahrawi from Western Sahara. The Western Sahara is a former Spanish colony and is the scene of Africa's longest-running territorial dispute. The phosphate-rich territory was annexed by Morocco after the Spanish settlers left in 1975. Polisario fought a guerrilla war against Morocco until the UN brokered ceasefire in 1991. Morocco now offers to grant its autonomy, while Polisario and the Sahrawi people are demanding a referendum on full independence. The talks between both sides have been deadlocked for years, and the last meeting in February 2010 ended without any movements in the dispute. This past Monday, at least five people have been killed in clashes in the Western Sahara after Moroccan security forces broke up a protest camp near the territory's capital. This protest camp has been the biggest protest against Moroccan rule in the 35-year dispute. The repression by Moroccan forces came just days before a meeting in New York between Polisario and Moroccan officials to try and broker peace in the region. Joining us on the line is Malainin Lakhal, the Secretary General of the Sahrawi Journalists and Writers Union. He is currently in Algeria. Hello, Mr. Lakhal.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Well, not that fine because of what's happening now in the occupied zones of Western Sahara.
And we wanted to talk about this exactly, and I'm hoping that maybe you can start by telling us a bit about the history of the Western Sahara and how did it come to a point that Morocco is denying it independence.
Just to make it as easy for the listener as possible, Western Sahara is recognized by the United Nations and the international community as a colony, the last colony in Africa since the 60s. It was supposed to be decolonized like the rest of African countries in 1975, but instead of that, Spain, Morocco, and Mauritania decided to hinder this United Nations decolonization process, and they just parted the territory as a cake between them, Morocco taking the north, Mauritania taking the south, and Spain maintaining economical interest in the region. So since 1975, practically, Morocco invaded the territory via military means, imposing a military occupation on the territory and on the Sahrawis, and refusing to let the United Nations organize a vote for the population to decide the future of the country like other nations did. So since 1975, Sahrawis have been fighting back the Moroccan occupation. In 1991, as you said, the United Nations again succeeded to bring Morocco to the table of negotiation and accept to organize a referendum. But Morocco helped and supported by France, especially France, but also by the responsibility and lack of firm condition from Spain, Morocco maintained the occupation against the will of the United Nations and in complete violation of the international law. What is on the scoop now is a massive human rights violation of population in the occupied Western Sahara. And when I say occupied, I need you to visualize a territory which is a big prison, a territory where the Moroccan army built a wall, a physical wall, with more than 5 million landmines to cut the Sahrawi families and pass them in two for the last 35 years. Families couldn't meet. Sahrawis in the refugee camps in southwest Algeria cannot visit the territory since 1975. And on the other side, the occupied territory under Moroccan control, there is a population which is basically in a big prison controlled by the Moroccans. And this is why lately we had this big camp near the capital of Western Sahara. The population just said enough is enough. Enough marginalization, enough violations, enough impoverishment of the people of the territory, though we have a very rich region. So basically, this is the main issue now.
And in terms of Polisario, can you talk to us a bit about the Liberation Front and also the government of the Western Sahara that has been negotiating and ruling and taking the business of the country from Algeria? And how did they come to have their government in Algeria?
Polisario Front is a liberation movement that was founded by Sahrawi students and ex-veterans of a struggle against resistance against the colonial invasion, French and Spanish occupation. It was created in 1973, against the Spanish occupation at the beginning. And then, when Morocco took over and invaded the territory, Polisario Front started fighting again against Morocco. Yes? Did you say something?
No, I didn't. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. So, for 16 years, Polisario Front Liberation Movement has been fighting against Morocco to bring Rabat to the table of negotiation and to convince the United Nations that Sahrawi people are willing to fight for their right to independence and that Sahrawi people will never give up this fight until Morocco and the international community implement the international law, which basically gives Sahrawis a right to their land and a right to decide over the future, political future of their land. In 1991, in fact, the United Nations succeeded to block a UN peace plan between Morocco and Polisario, and we were supposed as Sahrawis to vote in 1992 on the future of our land. But again, Morocco, with France supporting him in the Security Council, succeeded to delay this peace process, and then other peace processes were proposed by the United Nations, and again Morocco succeeded to delay the implementation of all this peace process. With regard to the Sahrawi government and state, it was proclaimed by the Sahrawi people and Polisario Front as the leader of the Sahrawi people in 1976, to fill the political vacuum that Spain, when it withdrew from the territory without finishing legally the decolonization of the territory. So Sahrawis decided to take the situation on their hand, to constitute their own government, though in exile. It was proclaimed in the Sahrawi liberated zone, not in Algeria, in 1976. But Algeria, because Algeria and Africa in general is the main supporter of the Sahrawi liberation, like it supported the rest of the African liberation struggles in other countries, Algeria, of course, didn't have a choice but to receive Sahrawi refugees because they were attacked, as I said in the beginning, from the north by Morocco and from the south by Mauritania. So basically, all our neighbors were against our war and attacked us militarily, except for Algeria, which did not participate to this machination and refused to accept the Moroccan colonial fait accompli. Another point that should be well understood: Algeria, in taking the position of the African Union, because the African Union is accepting the Sahrawi Republic as a full-fledged state member in the African Union. We are now a founding member of the African Union since 2008. We have been members in the African organization Unity since 1984, and the African Union is strongly supporting the Sahrawi struggle and right to self-determination.
That's very interesting. I didn't know about the African Union, and I think that them accepting the Western Sahara, but not the UN, not the West, really says something about the politics of the world. So I wanted to talk a bit more about that in terms of, you know, Morocco annexed the Western Sahara when the Spanish colonials were leaving, right? So we can see this occupation of the Western Sahara, of course, as a continuation of colonialism. So, Mr. Lacalle, I wanted you maybe to comment a bit about the role that the Spanish still play in the occupation of the Western Sahara and how Morocco is an extension of this. And also, what is the role of France? You had mentioned you know, some stuff about France. So I'm wondering, you know, where does the Spanish, the Moroccan, the French, the Sahari, you know, we talked about the Algerians already, but how do they kind of fit into this conflict?
Okay. So you have to mention something which is very, very important to understand the conflict. As I said in the beginning, Spain did not fulfill its commitment to the international community as a member state in the United Nations because instead of implementing the United Nations resolution and the General Assembly efforts to decolonize Africa, if you remember in the 70s, it was a big movement of decolonization and freedom of African nations. But Spain, instead of respecting this, because it was very weak at the time, Franco, the Spanish dictator, was dying. There were a lot of problems, internal problems in Spain. So Morocco, backed by France, backed again by Mauritania, backed by the U.S. in itself, especially. There is a lot of mentioning of Kissinger at the time as an advisor, giving advice to the king of Morocco to invade West Sahara. So it was a lack of commitment to the international law by Spain that caused this situation of occupation. Spain is until now considered by the international law as the jury, which is the legal administrating power of Western Sahara, but still it doesn't take any political position to fulfill and to assume its responsibility as such. Instead of that, it is leaving the territory under an illegal occupation, because if you go to the United Nations, you will not find Morocco mentioned in any UN official papers as the official administrating power in Africa. Morocco was mentioned in 79, in resolution in 79, as an illegal occupier of the territory, and still it is. And this is why the United Nations is still trying to implement the right of discrimination in Sahara and trying to convince Morocco to allow the Sahrawi people to vote in a referendum. Going back to France is supporting Morocco because you know the history of the French colonialism in Africa, especially in North Africa. But the problem of the French is that they lost Algeria once and for all, because Algeria fought the French occupation very violently and kicked them up, if you wanted, of the territory. While Morocco maintained very close relations with the French government and the French economy, especially. So there is a lot of relationship, economic relationship, but also political support and political interest by France in the region, and it is only Morocco that can implement and can fulfill this French political interest in the region. So this is basically very simply the main position of the actors. Morocco is maintaining the occupation because maybe you think that Western Sahara is poor because it is a desert. It is not. This is the fact. Western Sahara is very, very rich in water resources, in fishing resources, in phosphate, which is now, climax in the international economical market. Also, there are possibilities of oil and gas, and most importantly, it is a big region with a lot of renewable resources of energy, like sun, wind, and long beaches. So it is, again, a struggle for the natural resources.
And this is not something, this occupation of Western Sahara, that Saharawis have been passively accepting. You mentioned a bit about the resistance of the people and the demands of the people, and I think that we saw the escalation of this on Monday and how resistance can be repressed. So can you tell us about what happened on Monday?
On Monday, just before talking about Monday, I have to tell you that the Sahrawi has never stopped. We are a very small nation, but a nation that has always praised freedom. We are nomads. We do not submit to oppression or to foreign invasions. This is
120 seconds.
It was faced by a fierce resistance. The problem is that the liberation movement, as I said, was created only 2 years before the Moroccan invaded. So it was still young. It was created by young students, inexperienced students, but still they succeeded to bring Morocco to the table of negotiation in 1991. So there have been many, many uprisings in the history of Western Sahara in 1970, in the 75, 76, in the 80s, in 87, 86, 87, in the 90s, 92, 95, 97, a big uprising in 99, another big one in 2005, and now the Sahrawis invented, if you will, or created, if you want, a new form of resistance, a popular citizen resistance and
60 seconds
against oppression. More than 26,000, maybe it may sound small in your standard, but 26,000 in Sahrawi standard is a big number, decided to leave the city, to leave comfort, to leave their houses, and go to build tent camps in the winter, 12 kilometers outside of the city, to say to the Moroccans, enough is enough. We no more accept this marginalization. We no more accept to be treated in our own land as a third-class citizen. We want all our economical, social rights, and of course, political rights. The Moroccans were trying to negotiate, apparently, but when the Sahrawis, the Sahrawi protesters, didn't accept the meager proposition, the Moroccan government.
And you are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. Unfortunately, our phone card has run out, but we were talking to Malaini Lakhal, who is the Secretary General of the Sahrawi Journalists and Writers Union. And he was just telling us about what recently happened on Monday in a camp in Western Sahara, a protest camp that was set up by Sahrawi people. And it came to a point where the Moroccan forces invaded the camp and killed more than 5 or 6 people. And they were really putting down this form of resistance that the Sahrawi were putting forward. And as Mr. Lakhal was mentioning, that these were people who left their houses, they left their homes, they left their cities, and they came to the capital and they set up this camp. And they were met by such repression by the Moroccan government. You are tuned into CHRY 105.5. FM. Today we're talking about the Western Sahara, and we are going to get online another interview. But before we do that, we will turn to our community listing. Stay tuned. This is CHRY 105.5 FM, African Perspective.
يا مولانا يا مولانا يا مولانا
and you are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. This is African Perspectives. To continue our discussion on the Western Sahara, especially in light of the recent breakup of protests by Morocco, we are now joined in by Mr. Sidi Omar, the ambassador of the Sahrawi Republic to Ethiopia and the African Union. Hello, Mr. Omar.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you very much for joining us. It's really a privilege. So we wanted to start by asking you about your role as an ambassador, especially in light of the recognition of what the Western Sahara and what it means to have an ambassador and especially a representative at the African Union.
First, thank you very much for calling such importance to the development in Western Sahara. Let me just put emphasis on the fact that the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic was proclaimed on the 27th February 1976. And in 1984, it became a full member of the Organization of African Unity, recognized by many African countries and other countries in the world. So as any full such republic, the Western Sahara exercises its sovereignty over the liberated territory of Western Sahara, and it has all the institutions and has established diplomatic relations with many, many countries around the world. And that's why my being the ambassador of the Sahrawi Republic to Ethiopia and also the permanent representative to the African Union, because when the AU, or the Organization of African Unity, was replaced by the African Union beginning of this decade, Western Sahara, or the Sahrawi Republic, was actually one of the first 10 countries to ratify the Constitutive Act of the African Union, and thus being one of the founding members of the African Union. So the Sahrawi Republic, although a large part of its territory is under Moroccan legal cooperation, but it is a full-fledged state with all the institutions and exercises sovereignty over the liberated territory of Western Sahara.
And the reason why we decided to do a spotlight on the Western Sahara, because it's a very important issue, but also on Monday, the Moroccan forces had broken up the largest protest camp of Sahrawis in the past 35 years. Can you talk a bit about what happened on Monday? And then also, that this is a strategic move by Morocco, especially in light of the talks that are taking place this week in the U.S. to try to broker a peace deal. So if you could also talk about the importance of those talks and discussions.
Let me underline that what happened on Monday, the atrocities that were committed by the Moroccan military forces against all civilians in the camp of Benizik, near the Kutai town of Laayoune, was only another episode of the criminal record of the Moroccan forces against our civilians since 1976, the beginning of the Moroccan occupation of Western Sahara. But what happened on Monday on the 8th was tremendously dangerous, because it signaled the fact that the Moroccans are assisting in their policy of repression against our civilians. What these people demanded were simple rights recognized internationally, the rights to have proper shelter and to have their socio-political rights guaranteed, but also, and most importantly, to advocate peacefully for the right of their people to self-determination. And the response of the Moroccan authorities was to storm the camp, and the sad fact that up to now, actually, we're not able to know how many people lost their lives and how many were wounded as a result of this brutal intervention, because there are many people are still unaccounted for, and every day the information coming from the Qatar territories indicates new bodies being discovered, some of them in mass graves and others being ditched in water reservoirs here and there. So that was a brutal intervention against civilians who were peacefully demanding the respect for their fundamental human rights. Indeed, it coincided with the third informal talks between the Polisario and Morocco, which was called on by the Security Council, which also indicated the lack of seriousness and political will on the Moroccan side to engage seriously in the negotiations, because that was the kind of message that the Moroccans wanted to send to the international community, that they are, after having reneged on all the commitments that they had made before the international community, due respect to Sahrawi's rights to self-determination through the holding of a free and transparent referendum, once again, they showed how disrespectful they are for the efforts being deployed by the United Nations to bring about a speedy and just solution to this problem.
And you had mentioned, of course, that what the Sahrawi people are asking is for respect, the right to live their lives. But on a political level, this needs to come through a referendum that was promised in the ceasefire in 1991. So can you talk to us a bit about this referendum? And also, what are, where are these talks, these informal talks you talk about leading to? Are they leading to, hopefully, a referendum?
Briefly, in the end of the 80s, and after 16 years of brutal war between us and the Moroccans, as a result of Morocco's occupation of Western Sahara, the two parties, the Polisario and Morocco, agreed under the auspices of the United Nations to go forward for a peaceful solution and to agree on the organization of a free and fair referendum in which the Sahrawis will decide, exercise their right to self-determination by choosing between independence or integration into the European power, which is Morocco in this case. That was the agreement which was signed officially by both Morocco and the Polisario, after which they agreed on a ceasefire, which came, as you've mentioned, came into effect on the 6th of September.
120 seconds.
And was supposed to take place early 1992. For that purpose, the United Nations deployed a mission in the territory, which is still up to now, which is called MINUSO, the UN mission for the referendum in Sahara, compiled a list of potential voters. By 1999, the United Nations came up with the final list of the voters. And it was actually at that moment that Morocco declared publicly that it will not go forward with the referendum, and that simply for the fear of losing the referendum. After that, many mediations were done by, let's say, for example, the former U.S. Secretary of State James Baker, and now another American diplomat, Christopher Ross. And all these attempts to try to bring Morocco back to the negotiating table and to convince Morocco to honor its commitments.
60 seconds.
Also the organizing referendum. But Morocco, beginning in 2004, has made it very clear that they do not want any referendum leading to the independence. And that's for the simple fact that they fear that any referendum being held under the supervision of the United Nations, a free and fair referendum, will lead inevitably to the independence of Western Sahara, and that's why they start putting all these kind of obstacles.
But at this point, I just really like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you are tuned in to CHRY 105.5 FM. We were speaking today about the Western Sahara, and we had on the line Sidi Omar, who is the ambassador of the Sahrawi Republic of Ethiopia and the African Union. And we were also joined by Malainin Lakal, who is the Secretary General of the Sahrawi Journalists and Writers Union.